Welcome to Treknopod, a seasonal short-form podcast hosted by two dads who love to talk Trek. I'm Captain Schaff, and with me each week, side by side in our co-captain's chairs on the bridge of the USS Treknopod, is Captain Vactor. How are you, Captain Vactor?
I'm doing well, Schaff. We've reached the end of our Picard journey.
I know, the mission is complete, and I wasn't ready for it to end. It's not right. Now, if you're just joining us and you don't know anything about Treknopod, first of all, welcome. We're happy to have you. Maybe you're listening to us on a podcast catcher. Maybe you're watching us on YouTube. We have a lot of ways that you can enjoy our content. And we also have a ton of short form content on TikTok and on YouTube Shorts. So, but with that, if you're new and you don't know what we do is each week during New Trek TV. New Trek would be anything that's currently on Paramount Plus that's like actively appearing on Paramount Plus. Right now, it's Star Trek Picard Season 3. But what we do is we drop an episode focused on our thoughts of the current Trek TV from the past week. And with that being said, we're going to get right into it because, my goodness, we have a lot to talk about. This is Mission 52, and we're talking about Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 10, the series finale entitled The Last Generation. So with that, Captain Vactor, let's get into our weekly mission with our series finale episode discussion. So as I mentioned, we're talking about The Last Generation, which is just an excellent title. I think an excellent title considering that we're building off of The Next Generation. It first aired on 420. Smoke 'em if you got 'em. It was directed and written by Terry Metalis. How did we word this? He was the Feige of... how did you say it, Vactor?
I forgot.
Yeah, I said he was the Filoni,
yes,
of the Final Frontier. Yes. The Dave Filoni of the Final Frontier. Yeah, he's been a showrunner on multiple Star Trek shows. He's certainly had a lot of writing credits in the past. We just learned the other day, Vactor told me that he was a writer for the Star Trek Next Generation graphic novel called The Hive, which looks really interesting. Definitely need to check that out. Apparently it's on Comixology, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Unlimited, yes.
Excellent. For some reason, my brain was like, Cosmetology. It's on Cosmetology Unlimited. Beauty school. You can read about it in beauty school, folks. So with that, before we get into any possible spoilers, I want to throw up a quick red alert. Because from here on forward, if you haven't had a chance to see not only the season finale, but the series finale of the show, first of all, you're doing yourself a disservice, and it is dangerous out there with spoilers and headlines. Now that the show is, the episode's been out for a couple of days, it is completely fair game, and everyone's talking about it. It is the water cooler currency, so you have been warned. The synopsis for the episode is as follows. In a desperate last stand, Jean-Luc Picard and generations of crews, both old and new, fight together to save the galaxy from the greatest threat they've ever faced as the saga of Star Trek The Next Generation comes to a thrilling, epic conclusion.
Oh.
Ooh, gives you tingles up your spine. Oh my gosh. So I guess we'll get the initial observations, impressions out of the way. Captain Vactor, what did you think of this episode? I mean, we both have agreed that the past 9 episodes leading up to this have all been excellent. They've just been consistently good, which is not something that this show was bringing us on previous seasons. So it is a welcome change. But how did you feel episode 10 sort of resolved everything, or how do you feel it went?
There's two thoughts in my mind when I finished the episode. Number one, I'm glad that I was spoiled in a sense, because I had heard at the beginning of this season, there were screeners out, there were advanced copies out, and reviewers saw the entire season and said it was great. And it was. It lived up to all of my expectations from the beginning of the season. And the second thought was they stuck the landing. They didn't.
Yes.
They didn't crash and burn when they were flying into the hangar. They stuck the landing. They did everything correctly and ended it the way it should have been ended. And it brought the entire series and I think the Next Generation to a fitting conclusion. So I just could not be more pleased with this episode.
I think you nailed it. Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to say it. Yeah, they really wrapped up everything. I think what made it wrapped up so well is that they had like 5 to 10 endings to this episode. You know, they covered everything. Everybody got their conclusion that they needed. You know, a lot of people had issues with this show or the season having too much nostalgia or too much fan service, or just looking at them as Easter eggs. I felt like that is exactly what you would want from this type of a season, a farewell season for the show. And I feel like if anything, it reminded us why Trek is so good. It reminded us why Trek means so much to us. And if anything, it made me love Star Trek even more. And I didn't think I could, you know, so I feel like they did something that is seemingly impossible. It's very hard to stick the landing on a show. You know, both Star Wars and Star Trek, we talked about how their Mando season 3 and Picard season 3 were both actively happening at the same time and ended in the same week. And I would argue that Picard really stuck the landing a heck of a lot better than Mando did. And that's not done a disservice to Mandalorian, but I think that Mandalorian was not as consistently good throughout the season, not as focused as Picard was. Picard was very targeted. Everything had a purpose. Every scene mattered. There was no, there was nothing that was just like, whatever, like it didn't matter. Like everything needed to be there. Every chunk was in the proper place.
Yeah.
Love that.
And this is, I think I've said it on this podcast before. This is what the entire series should have been from the start.
Yeah.
And I've actually recommended to friends and other people that were asking me, do I need to watch season one? Do I need to watch season two? And I say, no, you can go straight into season three. Yeah, you're going to miss out on a couple of things, you know, dangling plot threads. But to me, I think season three exists on its own. It is good enough that you can watch just season three. And if you're a Next Generation fan, you're going to get everything that you want out of it. I was actually just watching a YouTube video right before we came on here, and they were saying that Patrick Stewart did not want the first, you know, going into it, he did not want Picard to be a Next Generation part two. And that's basically exactly what we got for season three. And I think at this point we could say that Patrick Stewart was wrong. And if it had been Next Generation part two from the beginning, I think it just would have been that much better. Like we would have gotten three seasons of this instead of just one.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean,
I guess I have a question though. Do you think that we appreciate Picard season three more because we had seasons one and two that were not like, I don't like to poo poo on those seasons because they're not terrible seasons. They're not awful, unwatchable shows, but they don't hold a candle to season three, you know, by any means. But do you think that we appreciate season three because we had seasons one and two that just weren't so great?
I think we definitely, I think it lowered our expectations. And yeah, so three comes in and really blows us away. But I think even if we had, let's just say, even if we just had this season and we did not have seasons one and two, I think we still would have just appreciated it is a great season of television and the Next Generation send-off that we wanted. Mm-hmm. This is the way to say goodbye to these characters that we've loved for so many years. So I just think this is the way it should have been from the start.
You know, I saw a TikTok video today Shout out to the Trek Talk community. Super supportive. Amazing people. Really, really, really amazing people. I apologize. I don't remember the handle, but the person said that, you know, it's not surprising that season three is where Star Trek Picard really took off, like, and really like solidified itself as a great show, because according to them, the Next Generation TV show didn't really hit its stride until season three as well. And season three brought us the best of both worlds. There's a lot of great stuff that came out of season three into season four, and the show really did. The quality was really great. So, and I'm not saying that seasons one and two were, you know, whatever, but when I was thinking about that, I was like, you know what? That's kind of true. It's kind of true. Season one was kind of a slow first season of Next Generation. And I feel like it really didn't pick up properly until season three. So it's a shame that this is where it's ending and not going on further, unless something happens for a spinoff series that is not yet announced. But yeah, so that being said, let's go ahead and kind of dig into it. We're going to pick it apart as best we can. I'm sure we'll leave stuff out because there's just not enough time to cover everything. But I wrote some notes. I know Vactor had some notes. Quick mention and a little bit of a shout out. So one thing I love that they're doing on Paramount Plus is they have those ship bumpers. I said ship. Just every. I didn't say anything else other than ship bumper. Okay. But anyways, they show whatever is the featured ship of that show. So, like, you know, Strange New Worlds had the Enterprise going through, and then Prodigy, of course, had the, you know, the Prodigy and everything else. But like this show originally had the Titan A. And then for the final episode, it swapped out and the Enterprise D was featured. The music changed and we had like a glimpse of the Borg cube. And it was just so cool that they took the time to do that for one episode. Like, that's how important it was to Paramount that they would go through and make an entirely new intro for the show for a series finale. I loved that. Such, so cool.
Yeah, that was great. I loved all of those. And Mandalorian kind of does that too. And a lot of the Star Wars shows, they have like their little Star Wars intro. I think we can thank Marvel for the intro craze that we've come accustomed to now. Just the popularity of that Marvel intro. Everybody's got to have their intro now and their logo and everything. Even we saw it on the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Nintendo thing. But yeah, this one, they did a really good job incorporating the history of Trek and then, like you said, changing it up. So it wasn't the same thing every single episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I love it. So we find out, obviously, the circumstances are pretty huge. The stakes are huge. There is no other cavalry. The only ones that can possibly save the day here is the crew, which is just the TNG crew, the main series regulars of the Enterprise D. And they've got no help other than the Titan A. You've got Seven and Rafi and then a ragtag group of of people who are probably not qualified to be on the bridge, but are still helping out. But one thing they show pretty early on in the episode is the Borg cube and that the Borg have just been like chilling in Jupiter. We find out that they've been hanging out in the big red spot. I don't know why, but I found that funny. Like that was just funny to me. Like that, you know, the Borg could pick anywhere to park and they decide to park in the most prominent feature of one of the biggest planets in the solar system that we all like as kids grew up knowing, like you didn't learn the planets without knowing about Jupiter's big red spot, like that huge superstorm that's right there. And so I was like, they're just chilling in the super in the big red spot. It was just funny to me. And I can't explain why, but it was just like very, hiding in plain sight type thing. Right. So,
yeah.
And don't you think the sensors would have picked up on that? Like, we wouldn't know what's happening in our solar system. Yeah, I don't know. I think like in the 24th, 25th century, like we would probably know that.
Right. Because how many years has the cube been there? I wonder. That is something that they should have picked up on.
Well, So I'm pretty sure, and although they didn't like outwardly say it, I think that that is the cube or that is the queen from the events of the finale of Voyager. So, so, and that's sort of basically how Voyager ended. Like the Borg were pretty much decimated by that whole situation, infecting them and whatever else. So I think that's that, but that version of Voyager, that finale did have Alice, I'm going to butcher her last name. Krieg, maybe. I can't remember. But she was that Borg queen then as well. So it made sense that her voice was the same voice from that. But we do get to see the Borg queen finally. It is not her. It's not Alice in makeup. It's somebody else. But they could get away with that because of all the weird stuff happening to her. She was basically like being reanimated, almost like as if she was a corpse before too.
Right. And she's basically like emaciated, having, like you said, the after the Voyager finale, she basically has to consume her children, and that kind of shows you the desperation of the queen. And I was listening to the Ready Room, and they were talking. Terry Metalis was talking about how the entire season can be summed up in that Borg Queen of there's the next generation versus the last generation. The children having inherited the sins of the previous generation. So you see it with Jack and Picard. You see it with the Borg. Probably even with the changelings. Like they're. The offspring has to deal with what the parents, you know, left them with. So I thought that was an interesting thing that Terry Metalis was going for in this entire season and naming this episode. Like you said, the last generation, it kind of has a double meaning of a play on the next generation. And then also this is the final, like this is the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I always wonder when, you know, writers, they have all these like thematic things like the children inheriting the sins of the previous generation. Like that's deep stuff. And as a writer, like sometimes when I'm like writing things, I don't like my mind doesn't think to, you know, to put that subtext in to really like lace it with that. And sometimes I wonder if writers just realize as they've been writing that, oh, wow, you know what? This actually is. Like they're only realizing their own themes after they've written it type thing. I always wonder that if they just sort of stumble on a theme, but not intentionally, they're like, oh, I'm kind of smart. This worked out.
Yeah. I'm sure they have both. Like I'm sure some people are just geniuses and they do it on the first pass. And then others it's after rewrite. Oh, I found something here. And then also having a team of writers, you know, having a writer's room, of people kind of going through and cracking the story or breaking the story, I should say. I find that interesting also. So I actually listened to a couple comic book writers podcasts and listened to them talk about writing. Mm. And I find that all interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating. Fascinating. When we are basically treated to like a distress call from the president of the United Federation of Planets, who is the voice provided none other than Walter Koenig himself, who was Pavel Chekhov from the original series. But in this time, because this is, of course, the future, he is playing his son, Anton Chekhov, which is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant piece of a touching tribute. And an also very clever way to sort of get him into the fold and have a nice cameo. So the touching tribute, of course, would be the actor Anton Yelchin played Pavel Chekhov in the Kelvin timeline Star Trek series from J.J. Abrams. And of course, he tragically passed away before he could be in Star Trek Beyond. And just awful, awful stuff. But very cool that they chose his first name to be basically Pavel's son. And then there was even a moment in the speech where Pavel's like, There are always possibilities. And he does like the whole Pavel like Chekhov impression. And it is such a great way to sort of give us one extra bit of Chekhov and in the way that we remember him. I thought that was really very cleverly done.
Yeah, there was a lot of original series kind of tributes throughout this whole season. I think a lot of echoes from the movies specifically. A lot of the second movie, a lot of Undiscovered Country. Like, there's a ton of things that if mm-hmm. you go through it, it's like, I think what you were saying about lacing these hidden references and meanings inside of it, they did a great job throughout this entire season. So this is just another great shout out to the original series.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As I mentioned before, Seven, Rafi have commandeered the Titan A. They've taken it back, and they've been fighting back the Borg resistance from these assimilated youngsters on the Titan A. And they figured out a way to retake the bridge, which is awesome. But the only ones that are left that weren't affected by this assimilation are the older generation, who are older than 25, which includes... the would-be pilot of the Titan A as a result of all of this. I didn't catch his name. Did you catch his name at all by chance?
I did not. I was too busy laughing.
I was laughing so hard at this. very well-written moment. But this guy, Seven's like, okay, I need you to pilot, set a course for whatever. Like, we're going to, you know, they need to like go help out, blah, blah, blah. And he's like... He looks totally overwhelmed. He turns around to Seven. And he's like, I'm the cook. I've only had some lunar flight class training, but I didn't finish. I was close, but my mom got sick. She had to run. Then he had to go run the deli back home because his brother had a hernia. Like, the whole thing. When he said his brother had a hernia, I lost it. I was laughing so hard at him just like spinning his gears and explaining why he's completely unqualified to be on the bridge. it was a nice moment of levity in an otherwise like heavy stakes episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great, great moment.
what other stuff did you catch throughout the episode?
You know, just the, specifically the, all the moments on the D bridge, everything. Just thinking about the nostalgia of Next Generation. And like you said, some people didn't like that. I was there for it. Every single moment of nostalgia, the original computer voice, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, the original computer voice is the daughter of... The Star Trek, now I'm blanking on the founder, the creator of Star Trek.
Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah. Is that Roddenberry's daughter that did the voice?
Her name is Majiel Barrett.
Yes.
And she was married to Gene Roddenberry.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. They had a son. His name is Rod Roddenberry. Very original. but in addition to playing the voice, she actually was also Nurse Christine Chapel.
Yeah.
She played Number One, and she on TNG played Counselor Troy's mom, Lwaxana Troy, if you recall.
Yeah.
But she provided the voice of most of the onboard computer interfaces from 1966 all the way to 2009. So, hey. Well, actually, I take that back. Now we can include 2023 in that as well. So, but yeah. Yes. Very, very cool.
Hearing her voice and Riker, I miss that voice. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. You were talking about on the D, there were a lot of great moments. I love the moment where Beverly is at tactical. So they're, they've already, Frakes, I shouldn't say Frakes. Riker, Worf, and Picard have already transported onto the cube. They've been invited to go meet the queen and everything. And Beverly, LaForge, and Data, and Troy are all on the bridge. And You don't expect Beverly to be at tactical firing phasers and photon torpedoes, but she does. And she does it like she's been doing it for years. And it's almost like she's like activated like God mode, or she's like figured out like infinite ammo cheat, because she's shooting off phasers and photons like they are, like they have an endless supply of torpedoes just hanging out on the bridge of the, I'm sorry, not the bridge, in the Enterprise D. It was very funny. And then seeing the reactions of the remaining three, they all turn around very slowly at Beverly and are like, where did that come from? That was very well done. Very well done. She's like, she says something about it. It's been a long 20 years or something like that.
Right.
So very, very fun moments. Very, very fun moments.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a brief mention to something. I wanted to get your take on this. So we know that the Borg can adapt, right? That they, when they assimilate cultures, they basically, I guess, sort of like they absorb those abilities or intelligence and anything, you know, like related to that. So like when it, would that include like combat training, do you think? Like, because here's my question. When the Borg are fighting like Worf and Riker, when they're down on the cube, the Borg are pulling out like some serious like karate moves against Worf. Like you can tell that they've had like sword training and stuff. And I'm like, where is this coming from? These are drones. What did you think about that?
It makes sense to me if I think about knowledge, you know, just information.
Yeah.
That can be collected. Like you wouldn't have necessarily the experience in the body, but if it's just knowledge, like if it's just, all right, these are a set of instructions for a martial art, then I guess that I could, in my mind, I could buy that. It wouldn't seem out of place to me, but yeah, that is kind of funny that they just seem like they're ninja masters or they're these specialists. Yeah.
Well, and I guess the only reason why I questioned it was I'm comparing it to what we've seen of like the Borg previously.
Right.
Even
right.
on like First Contact, like Worf has tangled with the Borg on many an occasion and they flail their limbs around, but they're not like fight experts.
Right.
Or anything. So to me, it felt a little bit too choreographed.
Yeah.
For them. It makes sense for Worf to be doing all that stuff, but I guess maybe they had to have the Borg know the moves because otherwise Worf would make quick work of them.
Right. And it's also kind of
skills.
I think maybe just the evolution overall, because yeah. you saw something similar in Star Wars of like the lightsaber fights where in the very beginning, the first Star Wars movie, they're basically two old men, like barely swinging the lightsaber. And then you cut to, you know, the prequels and we got guys doing flips and jumping around and it's so acrobatic.
It's true.
And it's like, yeah, that's probably what it should have looked like from the beginning. But we've gotten this evolution over time and it's more exciting for the audience. So that's something that is behind the scenes of it.
Yeah, you're totally right. Speaking of Star Wars, there's a moment where the Enterprise D has to get to the center of this huge Borg cube. And conveniently there is a passageway, a very narrow one, but large enough to fit a galaxy class starship with room to move around. And it pulls off basically borrows some serious moves from the Millennium Falcon in Return of the Jedi. I wanted to get your thoughts on this as it was happening. Was that running through your head?
The corridor, like the narrowness of it, it did kind of remind me of that. They had that shot at the beginning where it was like the D kind of like just staring at the cube and you could see the size difference.
Yeah. But
yeah. It was very much, I think, shades of Return of the Jedi there.
Totally. Totally. And then when they had borrowed from Battlestar Galactica, and honestly, I don't have a huge problem with that. I think because as a fan, especially if like you are, you know, well-versed in all those moments, right? Those cinematic moments. I don't think it cheapens it because if you have to get to the center of the Borg cube, like how else are you going to do it? Right. Like, I guess my only thing that I like when I was watching it, I was a little bit whatever about is the Enterprise was moving around in a maneuverability I've never seen from it before. The Enterprise D has never had like that kind it was like Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, right.
The stuff it was doing was like power slides and whatever. Yeah. Like it was crazy. It was turning on a dime. And I've played plenty of Star Trek Online. You cannot move your ship around that quickly. So that was my one, like, I have to suspend disbelief here. I know that the spaceship doesn't really exist, blah, blah, blah. But like, I have to really further suspend my disbelief that this starship can move like that. Now, granted, I think the other thing I have to like absorb is it was Data piloting the ship, and he is in himself far superior than a human when it comes to processing information, right? So maybe it could only move like that because he was, you know, at that station piloting the ship manually.
Yeah, that's how I interpret it.
Okay.
And he's going with his gut.
Yeah, here goes nothing. She's like, what do you mean nothing?
That was great. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Brings us to the Picard Jack Crusher scene where Picard basically having no other choice, it seems, he's going to try to reason with his son within the collective. So he's going to assimilate himself, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he injects himself with a bunch of Borg cables to be assimilated and then have a chance to hopefully talk with his son in this sort of amorphous zone, which I always find it interesting how shows and movies sort of portray that, because there's really no way it's a mental space. It's a void, right? So like, how do you convey that in a believable way? And, you know, in the case of what they did, they had like a sort of a gassy room with a bunch of green lights and stuff. And like, we're all like, okay, that's the collective. That's what it looks like when you're inside the collective. And then like when Data earlier in the season, Data and Lore are battling it out in that sort of positronic purgatory, if you will. And, you know, that was like just a bright room, sort of like the load up zone in the Matrix or something, you know, like,
right.
I always find that fascinating. Like how they decide this is how we're going to portray an area of like mental space that doesn't physically exist. But it worked. But the point of it was, the heart of the matter was a father and son and trying to connect to a son and trying to save him from an overwhelming force. I wanted to get your thoughts on that moment between the two of them.
Yeah, that was great. Like I said, the theme of this whole season, kind of the next generation, the sons and the fathers and the family aspect, and the family that we never knew Picard had, it all came to a head in that scene. The Picard willing to sacrifice his life for his son, which he would not have done, you know, at the beginning of the season. You see how far their relationship has come. And it just, you know, endears you to Jack even more, because we have a history with Picard. And if Picard cares about him, then we care about him. So I thought that was a great scene between the two actors and just between those two characters.
Yeah. And you know what? Jack does have some huge shoes to fill, right? Like to be the son of two very important people in the Star Trek universe and, you know, to be liked by audiences, that's tough. That's a really tall order, and you have to be the right actor for the right role to make that happen. It has to be written well. It has to be acted well. Or you can very easily have fans turn on you for something like that. And I think that he really was the right guy for the part. And I think he did an excellent job with the material. He really, to me, I feel like he embodies it. Like there is no difference in my mind between Ed Spilliers and Jack Crusher. I feel like they are one and the same. He has now owned this role. No one could take it away from him. It's totally his. And after seeing him in it and seeing him sort of come out of it, I'm going to want more Jack Crusher. And I don't think you can not have more Jack Crusher in the future. Like a very important character like that, I think that you're going to have more.
Yeah, that definitely sets him up for a role. And he's the right age. It's not like he's not Patrick Stewart's age. So we can definitely see more from him. And I got to say, Shaw, I think they've erased Aragorn now, and I think I'm going to think of him for Picard now, from now on.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be real good. Yeah. They had such a touching moment between the two of them. And I would be really afraid to act like opposite Sir Patrick Stewart. Like, he's such an accomplished actor. He's been knighted for his efforts.
Right.
And he's playing such an, you know, like Captain Picard is, you know, arguably most people's favorite captain of all time.
Ed Spears, I think it was in a Ready Room interview, he was talking about the character of Jack and the legacy, and he was saying he's basically the son of the most famous man in the galaxy. I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah, you can put it that way. Because I guess growing up, I just took it for granted. Oh, yeah, Picard. Yeah, I know him. But he is kind of the center point and probably the most, I mean, him and Kirk, probably the most famous captains.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then so then you've got like this very emotional moment, and that's, and they really had a very nice moment. Picard saying, you know, if you won't leave the collective, then I'll stay with you. And he says, you've changed my life forever. Like him just getting to the, you know, and really speaking to Jack's heart. I wrote down a note. I was like, I'm not crying. You're crying. It was so sweet. It was so sweet. Cause anybody, any of us who have daddy issues, you know, and not being able to connect super well to your father. Like this scene means a lot. So, and they've definitely got quite a divide between the two of them. I mean, there was 20 plus years that there was a gap. Picard not even knowing he was alive. So, it's just very cool. Very cool to see the progression over the 10 episodes. Speaking of progression, we also get some progress in rank for 7 of 9. Mm. She is promoted to captain. By none other than Captain Shaw. We do get one final bit of video from Captain Liam Shaw. And it was nice to see Todd Stashwick again, if only briefly, as well as Captain Tuvok. Admiral Tuvok, yeah. I think, at this point.
That scene was great. After she had quit.
Yeah, after she was basically quitting, and he was like, I decline your resignation, yeah, or something like that.
I laughed out loud. Yeah.
Yeah. It made me think of that gif that we throw around to each other. Apology rejected. But so that's really cool. And that of course sets up the circumstances of Jack's enlistment in Starfleet later, which we'll get to. The show basically has a series of endings that happen. And there's a few of them that happen and I'm like, okay, that was really nice. But there's one that happens and it's not even the last ending. And I totally thought that that was going to be the ending of the show. And I wanted to get your take on this. So, of course we see like Data goes to therapy and he has a whole thing with Troy and it's funny. It's hella funny. I said, we all win when Data goes to therapy, because that was some really classic comedy stuff that he just keeps droning on and on and on. And she's not even taking notes. She's looking at her vacation plans. That was good stuff. But anyway, so the endings keep coming. But the one ending that stuck out to me that was sort of in the middle of the stuff that was happening, I was for sure thought, okay, this is it. Credits are going to roll. And it was the Enterprise D initiate shutdown sequence. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So when you were watching this, did you think the show was going on for more scenes after this, or did you feel like this was a fitting conclusion?
I thought that was going to be the end, and very much the return of the king syndrome where it was like another ending, another ending.
Yeah, that's true.
So I was kind of in the right mindset. It was like, yeah, I want more. But I thought all of them are great endings, the ones that we got. And that initiate shutdown sequence is where we got the line from earlier about the, I miss that voice. Like that sequence felt like, okay, turning the lights off, like we're saying goodbye to these people. And I turned to my wife and I said, that's it. We're never going to see the next gen crew again. Like there will not be another in 30 years, you know, these guys will be gone. So that is definitely the fitting conclusion for them, for that crew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many of the crew are going to be at this state of Washington State SummerCon in late June. And I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I am going to go on that Sunday because I have got to get an opportunity to meet these people, get a photo, you know, maybe an autograph, whatever. But like they've had such an impact on my life, and I would love to get the opportunity to just be in their space. I can't wait. They're going to be like, LaForge is going to be there. Troy, Riker, they just announced Q is going to be there. I do know their actor names, but I'm just choosing to say their character names. I think Gates McFadden, I think she's going to be there too. Beverly Crusher. I'm blanking on the rest, but oh my gosh. So excited. Oh no, actually no, I think Gates had to cancel. Yeah, Gates had to cancel. I'll look back at it, and before the end of the episode, I'll mention it. But yeah, that shut down. I thought for sure that was it. And it would have been fine. I would have been completely satisfied if that was it. But they did have a lot of other things to wrap up. I'm glad that Raffi had a brief moment where her ex-husband and her son and like her son's, like her son was like open to like meeting her grandson, I think. I can't remember the details there.
Yeah.
But I felt that it was a little bit cheap that they didn't even show the conversation. Oh. It was just her looking at a pad. After so much character development related to that, and to just sort of throw it away with like less than 30 second. Actually, it wasn't even that. It was probably 5 lines of dialogue treated for it. I know she's not technically part of the next generation, so you know, she shouldn't get priority or billing or anything like that. But I mean, she was a very important part of the Picard 3 seasons. So I thought she deserved a little bit more than what they gave her to end things on.
Yeah. It's interesting that she was there from the beginning, from the first episode of Picard, and she lasted all the way through. I'll be interested to see Raffi's legacy moving forward, whether we see her again in a Worf show, or if this is the end. They talked about it when she was on the Ready Room. She's part of this family now for life, this Star Trek family. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see where that goes. But it is interesting. I guess it's more than Allison Pill got for this season, where we don't even see her, or Elnor, or like all the people from the first two seasons, they didn't really get too much. Seven and Raffi got, you know, proper roles in this season. So at least she got to be a part of this season.
It's true. probably one of the best moments of the show happens right at the end. It's the poker scene.
Yes.
The poker game. And, you know, I almost said it last week when we were talking about like speculation, what was going to happen in the finale. On the tip of my tongue, I was going to say it. And then I thought to myself, no, they're not going to do that again. That's how they ended all good things. They're not going to do that again, but maybe they will, but maybe they won't. And I was like, I went back and forth and I decided not to say it. And I know what you're saying, listeners. You're like, whatever, you're just backtracking. You never thought this. Well, I thought it. I did. I thought that a perfect way to end this show when you've got the entire crew back is to do another poker game. And that's exactly what they did. And I'm so glad because poetically it's perfect. And I read this article and I sent it to Vactor, and Terry Metalis was interviewed, and he was told, he mentioned in an interview that that scene, we only get like a few minutes of it, but it's actually 45 minutes of content of just pure improv and playing a poker game between the crew that they just basically used footage from. And he let them just sort of do their thing. And they, you can just see, you can almost like see the shift in when it goes from a scripted scene to totally improv, because you can just see them get totally relaxed and totally free. And they are just like totally engaged with each other and having the time of their lives.
Yeah. He said all of the laughs were real, like you said, and yeah, that was just them hanging out. Like those actors all get along and they all have that, I think, that family bond together. So that was really good to see that.
They apparently still have a group chat, like a text chat.
Yeah.
And I think it was Brent Spiner, when he was interviewed on the Ready Room, he was talking about how, you know, for us, we don't get to see them together all that often. But in their real lives, like they are very much in each other's lives and have been for the past 30 years. So these are some like really solid friendships that they've made. And they are, in fact, family. And it reads that way. And I know that not every Star Trek show was like this. Deep Space Nine, I remember, I want to say it was Armin Shimerman who played Quark. He was interviewed and asked if his cast was like TNG, where they are just, you know, a bunch of goofballs and, you know, they play practical jokes on each other between scenes and they're just nothing but, you know, laughs and get along really well. And he said that his cast was, don't quote me on this, but to the effect of that they were just kind of like a bunch of professional actors who would do the scenes and they would go their separate ways. So like, it wasn't the same for the Deep Space Nine cast. Even though they probably had, I mean, they definitely had plenty of chemistry, but when you see TNG cast just interacting, man, it was just beautiful. And it made me smile and it made me wish I was there, like as just an extra person playing that poker game. Man, to be in that room and witness that, I hope that when this show comes out on Blu-ray or whatever, that they provide that 45 minutes like improv. I just want to see like the rest of it. I would love to watch that.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting to see what special features they put on that. That is great to see that they're still a family after all these years.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The last bit of scenes, of course, we get introduced to reintroduced to the Titan A, but it's got a new name. It's been rechristened. It is officially the Enterprise G. What did you think about this?
I thought that was great. And a very nice setup, Shoff, for a possible new show, which everyone is saying already that it's, you know, this new show is going to be called Star Trek Legacy.
Right.
And they've already, they just haven't announced it yet, but it's already there. Like everybody knows about it. So this seems like a very good setup for that. And if you're going to have an Enterprise, like you're going to have that flagship ship, then make it the Enterprise.
Yeah, yeah. And when I first watched it, I was like, oh man, I feel kind of bad for the Titan A. Like the Titan line sort of is kaput at that point. It's been overwritten. But I was watching some TikToks and doing some research, and this is not the first time that they've rechristened a ship and gave it a different name. The Defiant was previously named the Sao Paulo, I think. And there was another one that I'm blanking on at the moment. But it's definitely not the first time this has gone down. So at that point I was like, oh, okay, well, what makes sense thematically, poetically, for this show? And it is, you're right. It is the Enterprise. to have a Picard, well, I guess a crusher, not a Picard, to have a crusher on the bridge of another Enterprise, like that's poetry in motion.
Yeah.
I love it. The fact that he was fast-tracked to be an ensign, that I in only a year's time, that seemed a little bit like, okay. but I'm okay with it, especially if they are working towards a spinoff show, which I really hope they do. You know, Seven finally becomes captain, and then she doesn't get a chance to demonstrate that. Like, I don't feel like you do all this work without... and also the fact that they've proven how much the fans enjoyed it. Like, I think that's going to speak volumes for like Nielsen ratings and everything else. Like, I think that's going to be like, okay, we're going to have to greenlight this show because people want it. People would watch it. And that's what matters. It's what people want to watch. So
I literally have not seen a single negative word said about this season.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the people that had anything negative to say just don't really want a Picard show in general. And I think that's kind of, or they felt too burned by seasons one and two and they didn't really give three an opportunity.
Yeah.
But in similar fashion to Captain America, Age of Ultron, how Age of Ultron ended. And the new Avengers were set up. And right before Captain America can say Avengers Assemble, we cut to credits. Well, similarly, Seven of Nine's official warp line, whatever we want to call it, she's about to say it. She's about to make history. And then it cuts away. We don't know. But it really did look like, Vector, I'm going to say it. It looked like she was about to say... Roll that beautiful bean footage.
Nah. I don't think so, Sean.
Was she going to say, give me that Mexican pizza?
Yeah, that. Or maybe she would make a joke, Shaw. 7, 8, 9. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do warp 7. No, 8. No, 9. I love it. I love it. That's good. And then we actually get treated to, it's not necessarily it's a mid-credits stinger where Jack is putting his belongings away in his quarters and he is surprised by the appearance of a person we did not think was still around, but it was the return of none other than John DeLancey, AKA Q. And I was shocked. Shocked by this. What did you think when you saw Q?
I thought it was perfect because of his relationship with Picard.
Yeah.
Going on to the next generation of Picard. And I just was happy to see John DeLancey and looking great, I thought.
He does. He's a good looking man. If I look that good at his age, I'll be really happy with myself. I'm on my way because I'm getting grayer and grayer every single day. So we'll see. I'm not as tall as him, so I can't pull that off. But man, Q is a cool character, and you're right. It is a nice bookend considering that Q first introduced himself to Captain Picard in the very first episode of season one of Next Generation: Encounter at Farpoint. It's a very nice parallel with that. As Jack begins his very first mission in that regard. We're kind of at a point where we can sort of just talk generally about other things. There was something I wanted to bring up. And as I thought about it today, cause I was like, what kind of things did I feel like this show was like, didn't care about anymore. I don't feel like they cared much of anything about season two. Season three did not care about season two, like at all. They do not care about the fact that, do you remember when Picard had a girlfriend? The entire second season was basically Q's way of helping Picard to work through his mommy issues so that he could love another person, specifically like a woman. So he could have like a romantic relationship. And it was really also, he could get have a girlfriend who's a Romulan named Laris. And then in the first episode of season three, he's like, I gotta go help my ex. She's in trouble. And Laris is like, that's okay. I'll just keep the fire going for you for when you come back. And don't forget, we're going to go hang out with my parents on Saturday. And then, we're going to have friends over to play board games. And he's like, And then he never comes back.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was wild. Like, poor Laris, she's just sitting there waiting for him. She's like, he'll be back any day now. He hasn't answered my text messages or my phone calls in days, but I know he still loves me. And I want to see that conversation. He comes back. He's like, yeah, so I have a son now.
Yeah. This,
oh, man.
It's crazy how they switched from seasons one and two, like the tone.
Yeah. Like
everything about those first two seasons, you could almost classify that as a separate show. Like I said, at the beginning, there's dangling plot lines and threads, but for the most part, I think you can go in to season three cold turkey and still enjoy it for just a great science fiction show. And then also as the actual conclusion of the Next Generation. Actually, on the Ready Room, Terry Metalis said, we did the last movie. He was like, this season is the last Next Generation movie. So I thought that was pretty
cool. I like that. Yeah, I like that. Because ending on Nemesis, not fair. Not fair to the fans.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Speaking of Terry Metalis, did you pick up his voice as the dock master that welcomed them into the space dock?
No, I didn't. I found about it afterwards, but at the time, it didn't even dawn on me. It was such a quick sort of throwaway line, it didn't even register that it was him.
Well, plus I haven't heard him speak that much.
So
that was another thing. I didn't pick up on his voice either until I saw one of the Easter egg breakdowns on YouTube.
You wrote down this on the agenda, the Worf threesome joke. That was such a good, funny moment on the bridge. He's like, and I will make it a threesome.
Yes. That was great, right. And perhaps it is a good day to die. Like that.
Yeah.
There was a ton of great Worf stuff this entire season. I thought he was a great comedic relief for this whole show.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of nice callback lines. Like even the Borg Queen had a witness your future's end, which is something she says in First Contact as well. Like it was just like great to see a lot of like those parallel moments, and you know, you could call it recycled dialogue, but I just think it has further impact. Like it, I don't think it's regurgitated stuff. I think it just matters. Like it's, how else would you say it? Like this is a great way to have it be a nod and also have it be relevant. So I think it was great. Yeah, I mean, that's all my notes for Picard season three. It was excellent. Excellent. The music was wonderful. The writing was fantastic. All of the actors and actresses coming back. It was a fan's dream come true.
Yeah, I think this was a, like I said, fitting end for Next Generation cast and a love letter to all of us as fans of the Next Generation. This was very much a nice bow on the present of the Next Generation overall. We're going to look back on the legacy of Next Generation, include this season of Picard in there, and it's going to be great.
But yes,
also a very bright future with, I think, this new Enterprise with Captain Seven, and then Ensign Crusher. I think all of those things and Q are going to line up to be a very good show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally, totally. Yeah, I really hope it happens. I really hope it does because I think the fans want it, and I definitely do too. So, yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, well, Captain Vactor, that's that. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening and following us all season long for Star Trek Picard season three. Man, we had a great time. Just had a great time picking it apart, talking about it, and sharing our opinions and everything. If you are looking to follow us on social media, we sort of did away with Instagram, and we still have it. It's still there, but we don't post on it just because it wasn't getting a whole lot of traction, and we're going to focus our efforts on things that are. So TikTok and YouTube is where you're going to find us most often. That's going to be at Treknopod, TreknoPod. We would love if you would subscribe to our show on YouTube and TikTok. Follow us. We love the engagement. That is the best part about this whole thing, is that we get to interact with all of you. So really, if you've ever wanted a chance to chat with us, do it there. It's fantastic. We will absolutely respond back. Also, if you scroll down on your show notes for this episode, at the bottom, there is going to be an opportunity to click a link, and you can leave us a voice memo. And that gives us a chance to hear your voice and hear what you have to say, whether it be compliment, a bit of feedback, or just a question you have for us, or something you wanted to share, your opinion of season 3. We would love to hear all about it. We are going to be taking a little bit of a break. So normally we would say next episode or next week, but Star Trek Picard season 3 is done. Star Trek Picard is done. And we are going to take a short break. And I think we need a break after this great season. We need some time to sort of process it. But also, we're going to take a little bit of a mental health break on our end, and we will be back. We'll probably have some episodes sprinkled here or there before the return of Strange New Worlds for season 2, which happens June 15th, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's the date. But we will definitely be back for the return of Strange New Worlds, because Pike for president. Yeah. So with that, I believe our mission of the week is complete. Now, boldly go and have a great week.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah. Woo.